Donald Trump's vituperative language was his own as he lamented the presence of Haitians in the United States, including the 60,000 whose temporary protected status he was ending. But when CBS News described Haiti as, quote, a shamble made worse by a corrupt government, close quote, or the Washington Post declared its, quote, chronic instability rivals its profound poverty as a source of suffering, close quote, they were likewise reflecting a particular story U.S. elites tell about Haiti and its relationship to the U.S. Journalists like Jonathan M. Katz in The Washington Post and Amy Wilentz at The Nation noted the galling absence of basic history from public conversation, the decades of repeated invasions, occupations, and exploitation, and the special animus toward a country where former slaves gained independence. It's been said that Haiti needs new narratives. The prevalent one that says the country is inherently chaotic and corrupt, and the U.S. and U.N. are just helpers doing their best, could be upended by simply steadier, contextualized reporting on events. Our next guest has reported on Haiti for years now. Jake Johnston is a research associate at the Center for Economic and Policy Research and lead author for CEPR's Haiti Relief and Reconstruction Watch blog. He joins us now by phone from Washington, D.C. Welcome back to Counterspin, Jake Johnston.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's get right to the story that you've just reported for CEPR and The Intercept. What can you tell us about what happened last November 13th in the Port-au-Prince neighborhood, Grand Ravine?
Yeah, exactly. So this was a anti-gang operation planned in conjunction with a local police department and United Nations mission in Haiti called MINUSJUST, which is composed of about 1,600 police officers and just took over from a previous UN mission, which had been there for about 13 years, just a few months ago. And that was the ostensible purpose of this raid into Grand Ravine, was to target some gang activity. There had been some high levels of violence over the previous year. What ended up happening is that this spilled over onto a school campus and actually ended in the summer execution of innocent civilians.
Well, when you say spilled over, the UN is saying when it got to the killings on the campus, the UN involvement ended. What should we know about the UN narrative of what happened versus what you heard from folks on the ground?
First, it's important to note that there's a lot we still don't know, and I think that's one of the really important things here. We've tried to put together sort of a timeline based on my own conversations with witnesses and victims, also local human rights organizations who've tried to investigate and document this. But we're sort of still stringing that together. And I think this is one of the really important things about getting to the bottom of the UN role, is this is an institution that's been in Haiti ostensibly to support the capacity of the Haitian police to promote justice. And yet they have seemingly significant information about this operation, about what went wrong. And we've heard very little from them about it. And so what the UN has said is sort of this massacre that actually took place at this school was rogue police officers. It was absent, outside of the sort of scope of the operation. The UN said is that they responded to reports of shots fired. Two Haitian police officers were killed around this campus and then secured the perimeter. But according to the timeline that we've sort of been able to put together, the assassinations, the massacre that actually took place after that. And so you have this sort of scene with, according to the UN, their troops sort of circling the perimeter, but then Haitian police actually sort of exacting revenge for their own officers being killed on an innocent population.
Well, it's interesting. Outside the scope of the operation, they say these civilian killings were, but the operation itself was, say again, it was aimed ostensibly at gang activity. And is this kind of the main nature of the UN's training of the Haitian police and the UN forces or missions in Haiti, is this kind of police activity?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, again, this goes back to when UN troops were sent to Haiti in 2004 after the coup d'etat, and ostensibly to sort of restore stability and increase the Haitian police's capacity. And what that's meant sort of in practice has been, these raids, these operations in predominantly poor parts of Port-au-Prince. And, there's sort of a long history of these resulting in these sorts of civilian casualties. These are, very densely populated areas. It's very difficult to sort of maneuver within them. And these are sort of a natural occurrence. I mean, these are expected. I think everyone sort of knows that they're going to happen. And yet we continue to see this cycle where these raids are perpetuated rather than sort of getting to some of the root causes that allow this violence to thrive in the first place.
Well, yeah, making the same mistakes again and again seems to be part of the storyline here. And I wonder if I can move you on in terms of it's important to know about the U.S. and other countries' role in creating and contributing to the hardship in present-day Haiti. But I think also to talk about what assistance or what help has looked like is also important in terms of the present-day story. What can you tell us about the supposedly, you know, tankers full of economic assistance, you know, is the impression that you would get that the U.S. has delivered to Haiti over the past decades. And what do we know about where that money goes, where it's going? It seems as though we're getting some more transparency, but what we see is not great.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, so I think, you know, first, when you look at what the international community and the U.S. specifically have spent money on in Haiti, especially since the earthquake, but really going back further, I mean, for starters, the United Nations mission itself has consumed about $7 billion of international investment over the last 10-plus years. If you look a little bit further sort of down in terms of aid programs, economic investments, reconstruction, right, this is tens of billions of dollars sort of pledged to Haiti after the devastating earthquake of 2010. I just looked at these numbers recently, did a little update last week on where U.S. money has gone, predominantly through USAID, since the earthquake. You know, we've spent many billions of dollars in Haiti, and what I found was that actually over 50% of that money went first to companies located inside the Beltway here in D.C., in Virginia, and in Maryland. You know, some money gets taken off the top. Eventually, the program sort of gets launched in Haiti. But we see very little Haitian actual direct involvement in how that money is used, in formulating the plans. And so what you see is sort of billions of dollars that have been spent in the name of Haiti, but very little actually going to what Haitians actually want.
Well, that was what I was going to ask, because it seems like, I was reminded of a quote that I saw in just reading about this and talking about the 2010 earthquake. Author Mark Schuller noted that with stories of devastation appearing to many foreign observers as hell on earth, with phrases like state failure often repeated, foreign media coverage naturalized foreign control of the response. You know, so I think there's some way that media play into the notion that Haiti is a place that needs to be run by outsiders, the U.S. or the U.N. And it's not to say that there aren't all level of crises going on, but it seems like the primary call or need coming from Haitians is support for local organizations.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Local organizations, local businesses, local government. Right? And again, as we were talking about before, this is sort of repeating past mistakes. And we've seen this over and over and over again with donor involvement in Haiti's affairs, bypassing the Haitian government and then later saying, oh, well, there is no Haitian government to support, so we need to do our own thing. But of course, this is a cycle that keeps repeating itself. And it's those policies that perpetuate it.
Well, your most recent report is, of course, about this you know, you want to say anti-gang raid gone wrong, except that it sounds as though it's part of something that's going wrong, bigger picture itself. You know, your report is really all I've really seen about it. But imagining that we do see coverage of these events, which are, after all, from last November, going forward, I think we should be looking out for to what degree the UN owns its own role and its own impact. And I am sure I'm not alone in not being able to forget the story of the introduction of cholera. I wonder if I could just pull you back to that for a second, because it seems kind of like a template of the UN not being great at admitting wrongdoing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you had in 2000, you know, soon after the earthquake, again, these UN troops, they are not related to the earthquake, introduced cholera. This has killed over 10,000. It's sickened tens, if not hundreds of thousands more. You know, this has been a disastrous epidemic with huge consequences. And yet the UN failed to accept its own role until many years later, and still to this day has failed to truly step up and provide the sort of resources necessary to counteract this epidemic, which continues to kill today. And when you have this new UN mission, which was involved in the planning of this raid that we were talking about, you know, this is a mission that has been focused on justice, right? That is supposed to be focused on justice. But how can the UN have credibility to take on these issues of justice when they can't hold themselves accountable for their own actions in Haiti? And I think that's why this case is so important moving forward, right, is what role can the UN actually play in Haiti to promote justice? And how can they do that by supporting, you know, local populations, local organizations, and local government to do so?
I'll just say, finally, we also remember, in terms of environmental involvement, Bill Clinton doing this kind of mea culpa about, our opening up to foreign markets and the way we ran things economically was a mistake. You know, we messed that up. But I just kind of wonder, and there were lots of kind of plaudits about the frankness of the admission, but do those sorts of, yes, we made mistakes in the past, have they changed things? I mean, in terms of the U.S. engagement in Haiti?
Yeah, it's an excellent point. I mean, we've seen this over and over again in Haiti, where there's some acknowledgement of these failures, of these faults in the past, but then sort of a blindness to their perpetuation in the future, right? And so you look at Haiti, there was a devastating hurricane there last year, caused significant agricultural damage. What the populations were clamoring for, what was really needed was, support for local agriculture, for seeds, for people to be able to replant. And yet what we saw was this tremendous influx of imported rice, of imported goods. Now, that temporarily may have, been necessary for a time, but over a longer period of time, that's really undermining these local economies and these local agricultures in very much the same way that, Bill Clinton previously apologized for.
We've been speaking with Jake Johnston. You can find his article on the Grand Ravine Massacre on TheIntercept.com. Haiti Relief and Reconstruction Watch is online at CPR.net. Jake Johnston, thank you so much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thanks for having me.